thank you for joining us again. This is Bill and Steve's Excellent Podventure. I am Bill.
And I'm Steve. Today we are going to be reviewing Kings of the Wild, chapters 12 and 13.
I'm so excited. Now, you guys aren't going to know because I'm going to publish an episode and then this one following it. But you might have noticed there is a gap between episodes. Let's just say I'm finally back onto the reading wagon. Really excited to do this. If you're listening to this like much later, which I'm assuming you are, you won't even notice a single thing. I want to jump right into it. Do you want to start off? Like, what do we want to start off with? Do you want to start off with some of that sweet, sweet, smooth or chunky synapses?
Well, smooth or chunky, I gotta know. I can't give you one or the other at the same time.
You know what, brother? Let's chunk it up. Chunk it. Chunk it to me.
All right. So I guess that means I need to stutter, right?
Stutter? So you combine them, right? It's a one synapses for both?
Correct. Like we did last week.
I should put googly eyes in the microphone. Remember, that's who I'm talking to.
And that's who you're burping at.
That's who I'm burping at. Don't burp though for you.
So last week, we read all three chapters together in one synopsis instead of doing separate synopsis for each chapter. And we're going to continue that trend. I think that worked out pretty well.
Sounds good to me.
So, chapters 12 and 13, The Council of Courts and The Duke of Endland. Clay, Gabe, and Moog accompany Maddie and the royal entourage to the Council of Courts, which is being held at the Field of Lindmore, the site of the fabled battle between the Company of Kings and the last of the Heartwild Horde that had toppled the Druin Ain't...
Wait. Start from the beginning, but do it in that really cool voice. I'm going to edit it that you do it in a really cool voice.
Oh, you're gonna mess with my voice?
Yeah.
So start from the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep this part where I said chapters 12 and 13 and then the Council of Courts.
Yeah, cool.
Clay, Gabe, and Moog accompany Maddie and the royal entourage to the Council of Courts, which is being held at the Field of Lindmore, the site of the fabled battle between the Company of Kings and the last of the Heartwild Horde that had toppled the ancient Druin Dominion. Maddie reveals that the goal of the council is to convince the Duke of Endland to lift the siege on Castia, and should that fail, the Five Nations will raise an army to send to their aid. Two delegations, Phantra and Khaskar, are already waiting when the Agrians arrive. The Phantrans are led by Etna Dashi, a woman who appears more pirate than diplomat, and just so happens to be the daughter of an old friend of Maddie's. At the head of the Khaskars is the First Shield, a man by the name of Maladin Pike, the former frontman of the Raiders, a band that had once had a friendly rivalry with Saga. The Sultan of Nomir arrives next, in a skyship, followed much later by Obalon Han of the Cardians and his Raven Guard. Obalon immediately starts flirting with Lilith, which seems to bother Lokan even more than it does Maddie. Gabe points out to Clay the resemblance between the Han and one of Lilith's sons. Then Obalon banishes any doubt that he is the boy's true father by taunting first Maddie and then Lokan. To Maddie's credit, he manages to maintain his composure. Well, Lokan, on the other hand, decides this is the perfect excuse to draw his sword. Obalon draws his weapon in response, followed by Maddie and every armed member of the five delegations, except Saga. With the rulers of Granduul holding blades to one another's throats, the Duke of Endland appears, descending on the back of a wyvern. Not only is the Duke a Druin as advertised, but Clay recognizes him as Last Leaf, an old adversary of Saga, who had once attacked them in an attempt to claim Gabe's sword, Velikor, for himself. That encounter did not go in his favor, as he managed to escape with nothing more than a scar above his left eye, dealt by the very sword that he'd so desperately coveted. Fortunately, he doesn't seem to notice any of the Saga members present at the council, save for Maddie. Through the course of the negotiations, Lastleaf explains that he couldn't prevent the Horde from laying waste to Castia even if he wanted to, which he doesn't. Furthermore, he implores the rulers to do nothing, reminding them of how long and perilous the march through the Heartwild and over the mountains would be, and suggests that once his rule over the East is secure, he could become their ally. When that ploy fails to dissuade them, he not so subtly threatens each ruler with attacks by the monsters within their realms, while their armies are away. Sensing the resolve of the rulers beginning to waver, Gabe speaks up, which turns out to be a mistake. Lastleaf recognizes Gabe and expels any pretense of civility. Before he can do anything, though, Obalon seizes this opening and attacks Lastleaf. A split second before his blade reaches the druid, Obalon is intercepted by the wyvern's gaping maw and is bitten in two. Chaos ensues as the delegations scatter and Lastleaf flies away. While they are racing for their horses, Matty asks Moog to do him a favor. Kill him tonight.
My, we've all been there, haven't we? A lot thrown at you in this chapter. I can say it a lot because...
Chapters. It's only two chapters, but it feels like there's more there.
It really does. I mean, they travel to the Isle of Wights. They give you a little backstory about that. They introduce all these new characters, so you get to know a little bit more about the different cultures. What are the different cultures we were introduced to today? I try so hard to break it all down in my head.
Mm-hmm.
The Agrians are Maddie's people, so those are the people. Right. That's the most civilization we've been in.
Most
so far.
Of the people that we've met, yeah. Clay is technically an Agrian. I don't know about Moog, but anybody in Conthis would be Agrian. Well, not necessarily. I guess Conthis is its own little thing, but it's technically part of Agria. Anyway, so we have the Khaskars, also referred to as Northmen. Just because they're called Northmen, I picture them somewhat Viking-like. And we have the Fantrans, who are the East Coast pirates.
Those are the women?
Yes. They're a matriarchal society, so they're mostly women. All of the important people are mostly women. Narmir to the south.
Those are the ones I confuse. I think it's the Northmen and the Narmir. I think I get confused.
With the ends. Yeah, the Narmir, think they're kind of a deserty people. Like, the leader is a sultana, which is the feminine version of a term which I think is Arabian, sultan.
I was picturing Dothraki, so that kind of makes sense.
Dothraki, which are more modeled after the Mongols.
True.
Which would be like horse nomads.
Okay. So I like that. I like that twist because that helps me to...
The Khaskars seem more like Dothraki with Obalon Han.
Yeah.
Because they have a horse culture. Probably not as extreme as the Dothraki because they're... pretty extreme.
No, because the Dothraki don't use them as bargaining chips for every statement they need to make.
That was Maladon Pike.
Why would he do that? How would he? Son of a bitch! This is why I don't read.
I bet my horses. I don't have any more horses to bet.
I'll bet his horses. I don't know where he's from.
Did we cover everybody? I think
so. Northmen,
mm-hmm.
Viking, Mongols.
More like Viking. Yeah.
And then we got
Only not so much sailor. So Viking's probably bad. I don't know.
Eastern Narmir.
Mm-hmm. So
I mean, we can't like just pinhole them into one thing because like these are all really unique.
Right.
But
right.
I mean, I'm going to say we for get now, like a vibe.
So. For now, just to get a feeling for them, we've got the horse traders in the north, the pirates in the east, and the south we have the...
Agrabah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the east, we've got, you know, your Europe, the Agrians. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, your medieval people. And then we've got the Mongols just to the south of Agria. I'm pretty sure that's where they are. Yes, the Cardians are south of the Agrians and west of the Narmiri.
I would like to intercept that at this moment. I just realized there's a fucking map in the book. Very... very excited. Holy shit. And back to our podcast.
It is a fantasy book. 9 times out of 10, there's going to be a map.
I can dig it. Very great. Very good prop for a podcast as a map.
Yes.
To show. See, hey, look, I'm holding up to the microphone.
See, audience, this is where the things are.
Yeah.
See, you have Khaskars up here. Narmiri down here. Fantrans over there. Agrians.
Hold on one second. One of them wasn't looking.
Oh, yeah. And also over here, this is Endland, Heartwild Horde, right in the middle here. See that? Pretty cool, huh? You like those graphics?
They're too busy, distracted by your naked, glistening body. Well, you are what I tell them you are.
Isn't everybody?
so much good juicy meat as far as like backstory and deep world building.
Yes.
Is going on here. Really, the cultures, I'm already getting a feel, a vibe of all these people. Haven't even been there yet, haven't seen much of them yet, but a great little chapter. And this is the chapter before we get to the real meat, which is the Duke of Endland. A character who they mentioned early in the book that I thought was just going to be part of throwaway backstory, let you know that they had done some shit. But no, it's legit. You know, Last Leaf Man, he shows up on a wyvern, which I really like because the difference between a wyvern and a dragon, like in this lore, helps me so much in my own world building. Not that I'm going to steal it, but I think it's a generic enough fantasy trope that you can... I like the way he defined it. I definitely want to use that going forward.
Yeah.
And I'm sure... And once he said it, it kind of made sense. Like, oh, I should have been able to put wyvern and dragon in the different terms before, you know.
So quick point of order. And you'll be the final say on this. But is it wyvern or wyvern?
Oh, for me, it's wyvern. But if I hear wyvern, I don't pull up the gate.
Right. You don't, like, halt a podcast to make a point about it?
No.
That's good. That's good. You're a good person. Better than other people.
Yeah, some of the best. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm doing that. Go ahead.
So I'm waiting to be interrupted.
Aren't we all?
Yes, we are. Two things we're doing. Being distracted by my glistening naked body and waiting to be interrupted.
If... any women out there single want to meet Steve and interrupt his glistening naked body? Throw a blanket over him! Oh, I'm definitely deleting that.
I'm probably cold, so.
I'm probably cold. Do.
Just to get back at me. I'm sure you won't delete it, but.
I haven't decided yet.
There are two quotes that from these two chapters that I think are very... they're worth examining. So the first is... something that the First Shield of Khaskar says to Clay when they're talking about their children. I'll bet my horse he's a stone-cold killer, same as his father.
So he's saying that he would bet a horse just like his father would bet a horse.
Correct. Correct. But what I'm getting at here is that he refers to Clay as a stone-cold killer. And, you know, we're introduced to Clay as a family man. You know, we see his softer side and everything. We know he was a mercenary. But he seems like a pretty good chap, but someone who knew him from his mercenary days thinks of him as a stone-cold killer. I think that's a pretty interesting juxtaposition to the way he's been characterized so far.
I definitely think that makes sense. I, as a new, like, haven't read past this point, have kind of taken that for granted. Because I'm like, well, yeah, they're all badasses, so yeah, they're a stone-cold killer.
Well, there's a difference between a badass and a stone-cold killer.
Well, stone cold killer can be a throwaway expression used to say, hey, you're badass, you're strong, you're mighty, you're an adventurer, you're legendary. But to the stone cold killer taken, well, I don't say literally, but that expression going a little deeper, that's a good point. I'm sure going to keep a lookout for, you know, maybe Clay has some darker past than I can imagine at this moment. Because, I mean, there's definitely past he regrets, past he doesn't feel like dredging up, but. I don't know what we're in store for, what Clay's got going on. What kind of closets are in his monster, you know what I'm saying? Skeletons are inside of him. At least one.
Aren't they in us all?
They're in us all. Waiting to be interrupted.
Clay's skeleton is in everyone.
Clay's skeleton's in all of us. Waiting to be interrupted.
So the second quote comes from when Clay was ruminating on the difference between a dragon and a wyvern.
Oh, a wyvern, you mean?
Yes, I do mean a wyvern, but I'm saying wyvern because those are the rules we have established.
Oh, I'm glad you came forward with what you think is correct.
Yes, you're welcome. So the quote goes, a dragon could, if given sufficient reason, hate you. Something Clay and his bandmates knew all too well.
There's just too much. Where are they going to get a dragon that's going to, like, oh yeah, that's right, that dragon we pissed off 20 years ago. This book has so much. I feel like I've read so much in this book, and I look at where the bookmark is.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I was going to say, there's so much, and we're like 25% maybe.
Oh, good golly. Good gravy.
Yeah. And this is where it really starts to pick up. I feel like everything prior to the council was a bunch of setup and getting the band back together. Now, yes, the band isn't fully together, but I think we were building up to this point, and then from this point forward, it picks up. It just really picks up steam.
Yeah. This is going to be good. I'm excited. So, you know, I haven't even got, like, wyverns, dragons, Narmiri culture, mm-hmm. The Northmen.
Khaskars.
The Isle of Wights. Khaskar.
Khaskars are the Northmen.
The Khaskar. Oh, sorry. The Khaskars, yeah. The Isle of Wights, which we really, even by the end of the chapters that we've read, they only mention that they're starting to pop up in the distance. Yeah. We haven't really gotten to hear what they're about or what they're doing. I don't know if we will or not, so I'm going to leave that alone for now. But a lot thrown at you. And I think the biggest takeaway here is Lastleaf. I feel like he's going to be significant. If I were to predict what's going to happen with him going forward, he's going to leave and be the ominous villain that they're going to have to like prepare for and find all his threats. But
certainly, I feel like... certainly feels like this is the villain we've been building up towards.
Yeah, but the author really just doesn't do that to me. You know what I mean? Nothing here has been like... It's amazing how he casually strolls along these... Mm. He traipses along these tropes
like without... It feels meandering, but we go places.
Well, I was going to say is he traipses in these tropes without being bound in cliche. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like it's cliche.
Right.
And a lot of this, I'm like, oh, well, they have that in every story. And they kind of... Right. A lot of it you take for granted, but then they react to it as if it was real. Lastleaf is the bunny folk. So I'm picturing, like, guy at Eastview Mall... in April, sits on the chair, gives you a little bucket of candy, you wait in line to sit Santa on his lap. Claus. No, the Easter Bunny. But like, with a big gouge down his face. Like, is that what they look like?
If you look online, the pictures, they pretty much look like humans with bunny ears.
Hold on one second.
Maybe their nose is a little different.
Let's Googling this real quick. Deleting all the porn. And don't badass.
Don't delete that.
No, it was mine. I put it there. I can do better.
Yeah. I'm glad you've got standards for yourself.
I posted my glistening naked self up there, but nobody's interrupted me yet. So
yeah,
I'm just going to take it down.
There you go.
Nice. Once again, a great visual gag for our podcast.
Yes.
I'm looking at a picture of the Druin. That's really cool. Good artwork. Yeah. So that said, hey, check it out. Just Google it. You'll find it.
Yes, Google Druin. So for episodes and episodes, I've been commenting on Clay's voice and how, because of the way Nick writes Clay and, you know, the voice that comes across, it part of what gives this book its charm. It's also part of what makes the tropes feel not so tropey. And I think there was a pretty good example in these chapters when the Sultana shows up on her airship. He's describing it was a lot like a normal ship, except for like it had these gyres on it and the sails were a different shape. Oh yeah, and it was flying.
Yeah.
But the way he says it's like he understates the really fantastical elements, but at the same time hanging a lantern on the fact that they're weird and out of place. That's part of it. I feel like there's more to it.
Three lanterns on it, right?
Right.
Because it was by air.
And by sea?
Yeah. Instead of one by land, two if by sea.
Yes, yes, yes.
Three if by land, I mean air, or whatever.
Clay Revere. So yeah, I'm going to continue dissecting what I find so intriguing and endearing about Clay's voice. But that's one thing that I've noticed.
Did you find, when you were listening to the audio version, which I recommend you guys do if at any reason you're have a hard time finding the time to read or... Even if you've already read it and you're just listening to our podcast to catch up and have someone else to think about this with, definitely listen to it. The audio version is great. The one on Audible at the moment has a great voice actor. Did you mention that because you thought he did Lastleaf's voice interesting at all?
No, when I say voice, I should. There's the voice actor in the audiobook, but voice is also a literary term, which is the way the personality that comes across for a character.
I kind of want to backtrack on everything I said about voice stuff and not mention the audio version.
Okay.
So I'll get rid of that.
Yeah. Don't listen to the audiobook. It's awesome.
I'm really gonna. Yeah, I know what you mean about Clay's voice as a very specific voice. And the fact that you said that reminds me, Nick did a great job. It's so weird to refer to him by his first name.
But I mean, like, why not? We're practically related. No relation.
If you ever like somehow hear this, Nick, to me, you're a goddamn celebrity and amazing. So good job on your work. So if I ever pretend like I have any ability to critique your work, I apologize because this is an amazing adventure. Anyway, back to what I was saying. Last Leaf has a very particular way of talking, and I haven't figured it out yet because he's always like he doesn't open his mouth all the way. He's very forced. He seems to me like an animal who's trying to pretend he's not an animal. You know what I mean? Or like,
well, in many ways, I'm sure he's no. What I'm thinking of is he
prescience. Sorry,
prescience.
Prescience.
I feel like you were gonna say that. I feel like I knew it ahead of time.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
But anyway, he thinks of himself as better than everyone else, and yet he's pretending to stoop to their level to, you know, by like he's calling himself the Duke instead of Emperor or Archon. So like, I think that goes along with your.
Yeah, no, you're right. He does seem like he's holding back, almost like he's playing the human game. And annoyed by the fact that they don't realize he's winning, you know? He's like, no, you don't understand. I'm playing by your stupid human culture rules, and I'm better at it than you. Please kneel. please get down and understand that I am the superior species here, because I'm just doing this out of the kindness of my heart, dominating you as an entity.
All right, so anything else in these chapters? Quite an interesting and ominous ending.
Before we go on to that, there's a lot to be said about the prescience. And they mentioned he had assistants who whatever that were half-breed druids. The fact that possibility of the druids having prescience is pretty cool too. I'd like to hear that some characters we're going to meet might be half-druid. Mm. But that whole prescience, that is a potent... I mean, they already have a lot of advantage on the humans. Yeah. And then on top of this, that just even without any training, they probably...
Split-second foresight into the future.
Yeah. That's going to be really cool to see that come back to bite us.
Well, yeah.
That's all I had. I'm really excited to read some more.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Matrick's going to die, apparently.
Oh, yeah. That was an ominous ending.
Yeah.
I need you to kill me. I mean, there's got to be something to that.
Well, we'll have to stay tuned.
To find out.
We'll just have to stay tuned to find out next week.
We are Rodgers and Hammerstein, signing off.
Bye, folks.
Don't forget about the test. Oh, and before we forget, next episode is going to be covering chapters 17, 18, 19, 20. We got a big one. 4 chapters.
You're the one who has to edit, so
yeah, I know. It's gonna be a bitch. I'm feeling froggy.
Oh, ribbit. So I'm not gonna repeat myself from earlier, so you'll have to edit that out and put the two together.